This is Morgan Beatty bringing you NBC's News of the World. Tonight in the headlines, the big story, Lodge versus the Pittsburgh Press, new clues toward a climax in Vietnam, Boston, the lady politician, and the racial showdown in an election, Dallas, a dramatic fatal plane crash in a schoolyard, New York, an editor's farewell. Those are the headlines. In a moment, the news.
If your skin is bothered by chafing and minor irritations, and you want it to feel comforted, soothe it with Ammons medicated powder. Ammons helps your skin's natural defenses with moisture absorbents to help keep skin dry, cool feeling, comfortable. With skin protectives to guard against rubbing and chafing.
And Ammons is an effective deodorant, too. Helps keep you fresh all over.
For the protection your skin needs, use Ammons every day.
Now, here is Morgan Beatty with the news.
And the news tonight begins with another crop of clues blazing the trail toward a Russian climax in the Vietnam War. Still, what kind of a climax is not revealed. Today, former Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge spoke to the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh. His hearers, some of them, said he advocated an invasion of North Vietnam and the bombing of every conceivable target in the North. That would not enlarge the conflict into World War III. He said the decision on that score should be left to the American military. The interesting part about the Lodge report is that he told the forum in Pittsburgh he was speaking strictly off the record. But the Pittsburgh press picked up the report. The press said it had an obligation to report to its readers what it thinks is important, and if Mr. Lodge wants to keep from being quoted, he should keep from talking in public. Later in Washington, former Ambassador Lodge denied he had advocated invasion of the North. Nothing I said in Pittsburgh went beyond previously and clearly stated positions of the United States government in Vietnam, said the ambassador. He said he was merely describing conditions. A State Department official said Mr. Lodge was misquoted. But these are, nonetheless, clues toward a climax. And all of this follows by one day the recommendation by General Earl Wheeler, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that we bomb military targets in the North. The Vietnam debate continues. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara repeated today his objections to bombing the port of Haiphong, where many foreign ships are tied up, including the Russians. The Republican Senator Thurston Morton of Kentucky charged today that President Johnson had been brainwashed by U.S. military and civilian leaders into believing a military solution is possible in Vietnam. Canada's Foreign Minister Paul Martin said at the United Nations that a halt in the bombing is the first priority in efforts to start peace talks. The battle at the demilitarized zone continued unabated today, although the North Vietnamese shifted their artillery rain from American Marines to South Vietnamese troops nearby. General William Westmoreland in Saigon repeated today that American artillery fire into the North Vietnamese positions at the DMZ is the heaviest concentration of conventional firepower in the history of warfare. The enemy is suffering severely, he said. I'll be back with other news and special reports in a moment and more News of the World.
For the last couple of weeks, Monitor has had several celebrities on hand who have made that admirable trek to Vietnam to entertain our GIs. But this week, probably one of the nicest gals in the business, Miss Martha Ray, lets us in on some of the security precautions taken for the safety of these tours.
Whenever we were in any type of aircraft, many types, different types, you know, orange choppers, we're going from one place to another. You hit about 3 to 6 places a day, different compounds a day. Of course, they're quite close to one another, but they couldn't. They had to turn the radio off because you must never underestimate your enemy. You know, the VC are pretty smart. They know. So we just have to take our chances and just go in, unless it was being taken under fire at the moment we were supposed to touch down. Then they would just throw a flare out, a red flare out in the ground there, and that meant that we couldn't land.
You'll hear more from Martha and lots of other big names, and me, I'm Ed McMahon, this weekend on NBC Radio.
Again, Morgan Beatty.
Tonight, a special night for some of us. We are changing the sequence of News of the World for reasons to be given later. But now around the world briefly. Dallas, Texas, a small plane crashed in flames into an elementary school today, killing the 4 occupants of the plane or more. Police said 4 to 8 bodies were found, but as far as is known, all the school children had left, miraculously, just before the crash. Presumably, none of them died. Ismailia, United Arab Republic. Israeli gunfire killed 36 persons and wounded 85 in Ismailia on the west bank of the Suez Canal today. That's an Egyptian report. Prestwick, Scotland, television actress Susan Oliver landed her single-engined aircraft at Prestwick tonight on her solo speed record attempt from New York to Moscow. Philadelphia, one man was arrested and three others are sought on charges of plotting to start a race riot and then to poison hundreds of Philadelphia policemen. The plot was concocted this past summer by members of the Revolutionary Action Movement, RAM. It's a Negro extremist group. District Attorney Arlen Specter revealed the plan. Washington, higher food prices led to a rise in living costs of 0.3% in August, a government report today. Next, a special report, racial climax in the Boston election. Here is William Ryan, NBC News correspondent.
There will be racial issues involved in the November election for mayor in the city of Boston. They will be directed against the candidate who led a field of 10 in yesterday's nonpartisan primary, Mrs. Louise Day Hicks. She is a member of the Boston School Committee, in effect the city's Board of Education, and she has led the fight to prevent the busing of students away from their homes and their neighborhood schools in efforts to correct racial imbalances, which are reflections of ghetto populations in Boston. Mrs. Hicks, a Democrat, has maintained that her intent is to preserve the neighborhood school. Critics have maintained that Mrs. Hicks is prejudiced. The president of Boston's chapter of the NAACP, Kenneth Guscott, says Mrs. Hicks will be opposed on the issues. The first Republican to run in the primary for mayor in Boston since 1933, State Representative John Sears, says he will vote for Secretary of State Kevin White, a Democrat who ran second to Mrs. Hicks. U.S. Senator Edward Kennedy, a resident of Boston, says, "We will unite behind Kevin White and we will win." Mrs. Hicks' generous response is, "May the best woman win." Bill Ryan, NBC News.
And then there's a story of the end of an editorship, a story of transition between my administration on News of the World for NBC and the beginning of a new one. The new editor will be the man whose voice you have just heard, William Ryan. Tomorrow he becomes editor of News of the World. That story when I return in a moment.
Excedrin headache number 006. The spy ring.
We entrusted you with a very dangerous piece of espionage, understand?
It was dangerous, but we...
We came through.
You encountered no difficulty with the umbrella?
What umbrella?
Do you not understand me?
I left my umbrella in
the umbrella.
I'm cold.
Umbrella. Good snap, August.
About the cantaloupe. Did you retrieve the cantaloupe from the open garden in Samarkand?
Yes. Please. We put the cantaloupe in the antelope's mouth. In the museum in Madrid, where it's now.
Madrid in Cairo.
Cairo.
Your cigar means Cairo in code.
I would never have gone to Madrid.
Hand me the Excedrin bottle.
Do you have a headache?
An international Excedrin headache.
The world is full of Excedrin headaches. That's why you want Excedrin Strength. Tablet for tablet, 50% stronger than aspirin for relief of headache pain. For Excedrin headaches, get Excedrin relief.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to make a very depressing report on both of you.
With a closing story, Morgan Beatty.
And now my last report for News of the World. Tonight, I retire after 25 years on this particular firing line. Tomorrow, your new editor will be a 40-year-old journalist and father whose fame among us workmen in the news vineyards rests on the accolade, Bill's always where the action is. He started in adult life as a Marine in World War II, felt the magnet of the news, and 10 years ago joined NBC as an action reporter. On the day of the Kennedy assassination, you may recall it was Bill Ryan who instinctively set a quiet, calm mood as anchorman, a mood that lasted for 11 hours of superlative ad-lib broadcasting. You have seen him many times on TV as editor of the Smithsonian series and others, and you've heard him often on News of the World. As the NBC man on the USS Wasp in the Atlantic, he covered the splashdown and dramatic recovery of Gemini 9 out of space. Bill Ryan is a bird-dogging reporter. He is young, he has ideas, he's the father of 9 children, and he's my friend, and I commend him to you wholeheartedly. Bill has the same problem in front of him today that I encountered years ago at the start of World War II, when I began network broadcasting with News of the World. Before that, in 1939, the then editors of NBC's News of the World set the pace in broadcast journalism. It was news of the world as men covered the end of the German pocket battleship Graf Spee off South America. It was news of the world whose reporters dramatically told the world about the phony war in Europe. In those days, I didn't know it, but I was in training to step into the editorship of News of the World. I so well remember the day when Cordell Hull, the late Secretary of State, beckoned to me in the hallway in the State Department. I joined him and the late Fred Essery of the Baltimore Sun. Mr. Hull cocked his feet on his desk and told us he just had to unburden his thoughts. It was just before Chamberlain had brought peace in his time, as he thought, back to London from Hitler in Berlin. Mr. Hull said, "Gentlemen," he always started that way, "gentlemen, the Germans and the Japanese militarists are setting up huge no trespassing signs on the oceans of the world. They intend to end for all time the freedom of the seas. Every time I open my mind to the American people about this," he said, "I get myself called a warmonger. They don't believe me. Maybe," he said, "they will believe you." He went on to relate the deepest secret intelligence in American hands. We didn't know it at the time, but the United States Navy had broken the Japanese codes. We told the secretary we believed him, and within an hour, the Associated Press was carrying the story that the leaders of the United States knew of plots being hatched in Berlin and Tokyo. Later, the American people heard more of the same from others, and they began to believe the facts of international life. My first NBC network broadcast came on December the 7th, 1941, and I thanked my lucky stars that I had become a firm friend of one of the Navy's outstanding strategists. On Pearl Harbor Day, he told me, we would engage the Japanese at Guadalcanal, that we would engage the Japanese fleet in the Southwest Pacific, and why. Thanks to him, I forecast on Pearl Harbor night both battles, Guadalcanal and the naval battle of the Solomons. A year later, I was reporting the war from London when the Germans began to rain death on the British. My most vivid memory of those days, or nights rather, was walking through the streets of the west side of London. And I remember the Bobby in the blackout. He always recognized my footsteps to and from my broadcast studio deep underground. He used to shout, "Mr. Beatty, Mr. Beatty, remember to stay in the lee of the anti-aircraft," meaning the British flak would be coming down on the far side of Oxford Street. Every last pellet was deadly, and so I stayed carefully on the near side and listened as the hail of flak hit the buildings with a thwacking sound across the way. It was in those days I happened by the British Foreign Office one afternoon. Ridsdale, Anthony Eden's man, Friday, hailed me. He said, "Do you want a story?" "Of course I did." He said, "Nobody believes me when I tell them that Churchill and Roosevelt have authorized Eisenhower to arrest de Gaulle if he causes any more trouble in North Africa." I believed, and I told the story, page one, worldwide. Sometimes newsmen can be too cynical and knowing. And then there was the night of the presidential poker game on the Augusta on the way home from Potsdam. 3 days earlier, President Truman had told the four newsmen with him, including me, that we were going to drop an atom bomb on the Japanese and end the war in the Pacific in 90 days. He had to tell us what an atom bomb was. In the poker game, I was seated opposite the president, and I watched him as he perused a map. And I noted the cities and in the wardroom identified them as Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And I was beaten on the story. It was released at the White House. There was the visit I had with Sam Rayburn, the late Speaker of the House, when he explained his methods. When he told me that out in front of him every day in the House, there was always a concurrent majority. And the voice and will of America. His job was to find it, whether it be Democratic or Republican or both. And from that session, I learned what Lyndon Johnson would later mean when he sought to find the consensus of the American people's will as President of the United States. Mr. Sam's concurrent majority is Mr. Lyndon's consensus. And so I say farewell. I turn over my task with confidence to Bill Ryan at a moment as difficult as any I faced. He will focus the news so that you who listen will know what to do about the future of our nation. Goodbye, and God bless you and all of you in this studio who have helped me on the air. And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow, when Bill will be with you, Morgan Beatty, NBC News, New York.
This is the NBC Radio Network.